Welcome to Better Cybersecurity, the ISF podcast. I'm your host, Steve Durbin.
ISF CEO Steve Durbin is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. In this week's episode, Steve sits down with conductor, pianist, comedian, and broadcaster Rainer Hirsch. Rainer leans on his orchestra experience to explain how leaders outside the concert hall can build deep trust and strike a balance between discipline and adaptability in a rapidly changing world. He also reveals his secret leadership weapon, humor.
So in this episode, we're bringing together two worlds that don't often share the same stage, music and cybersecurity. My guest is Rainer Hirsch, conductor, comedian, and master of turning classical music into both a performance and a lesson in human connection. Rainer has led orchestras around the world and has a unique perspective on leadership, communication, and trust, all things that cybersecurity teams rely on just as much as musicians do. We'll talk about what it takes to keep people in tune under pressure, how to build trust when the tempo speeds up, and why, often, a little humour might just be the secret weapon for resilient leadership. Rainer, great to have you with me. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
It's very nice to be here, Stephen. Thank you for inviting me.
Pleasure. So, Rainer, when you're conducting an orchestra,
yes,
every musician has to, ideally anyway, stay perfectly in sync.
Yes.
No one can afford to miss a beat.
Yes.
Now, in cybersecurity, teams face a fairly similar challenge under pressure. What leadership lessons from conducting do you think might be applied to keeping a cybersecurity or indeed any other kind of team working in harmony?
I think a common misunderstanding, or not necessarily a misunderstanding, but something that people haven't thought about, is how divided the orchestra is. It has different teams, first violin, second violins, etc., none of whom know what's in anybody else's part. They are all focusing on their thing. And by the way, there's a hierarchy within those teams.
They're very similar, actually.
Yeah, you might be familiar with when you see violins, they're sitting in pairs. They're not sitting on their own, they're sitting in pairs. Those are known as desks in the business. In the first violins, there'll be 8 desks, 16 first violins in a full orchestra. They have a hierarchy in those desks. The first desk is the kind of more senior one, going back to the 8th desk. And so it is with all around the orchestra. There is a sub-leadership, which is actually the key to the collective success of the orchestra. The job of the conductor is to make each of those teams operate in a way together that enables them to come together to create something greater than the sum of the parts, essentially. Bearing in mind that, as you point out, they have to operate together and within those teams operate as a homogeneous unit. You can't have one of the first violins playing with a greater intensity or using different bowing or whatever than any of the others. They have to operate within their teams.
Right.
And so these analogies are very similar to how any large organization works. The only person actually who's got the kind of blueprint for the product that the orchestra is presenting to its customers, that is the orchestra score, is the conductor. Everybody else has just got their individual parts of the project. So coming together in that way, musically, well, requires listening. It requires following in certain occasions, leading in others, in the sense that there are moments when the players are literally playing on their own, and there are moments when they need to be guided by the conductor. And there are moments when individuals in the orchestra have solos. A beautiful oboe soliloquy happens. And in that case, the conductor is not showing the individual player how that goes. They are also following that individual, that person with expertise who comes and emerges out of the woodwork for that section and then maybe goes back into it. So it's a very strong analogy about how the orchestra works, which people may not have thought about.
And you mentioned trust a few times there. Successful orchestra obviously depends on deep trust between the conductor and the musicians. And indeed, as you've mentioned, between the musicians themselves. So they're relying on somebody to come in when they need to come in and to stop and so on. How do you think that leaders outside of the world of music might build that same kind of trust? Because that's becoming increasingly more important when the stakes are ever increasing and getting higher. Mm. And indeed, the music keeps changing.
Well, in my world, the key is to know the project that they've got in front of them. So this score that he or she has got to conduct and from which they have to evoke a performance. because I think it's crucial, knowing that score. And I say evoking a performance because I think a common misconception, the conductor doesn't do anything because the music is also strictly written down. Mm. The players know the song in the verbiage. Why do they need somebody else to show them? There's not enough information in that, in the score. There's simply not enough information. And you have to apply knowledge, taste, musicality, and the analogies that you could bring forward in business. You have to apply an interpretation to that project. And in order for that to happen, you actually have to know the details very well. You have to actually have studied the project, the score in our case. So the places where the orchestra might struggle or which are particularly important for your vision that you will have for this music. And it is an individual interpretation, actually, in the end, because the orchestra are all artists themselves, but you cannot have 60 painters all working on the same painting. The conductor is the person who's given that one job of examining this plain piece of writing and going, okay, well, this is what is intended. This is the emotion that is intended. And in order to bring that emotion out, we need to do this in a certain way. And inspiring and motivating everybody else to participate in that, irrespective of how they would personally go about it.
So in music, rhythm, tempo create structure. But great performances often involve a degree of flexibility as well. So small adjustments, perhaps even moments of improvisation, if something doesn't quite go the way that had been intended.
Yeah.
How do you think we could transfer that kind of ability, that kind of having to think on your feet in the moment when everybody is watching and anticipating a great performance? How do you think we might transfer that out into the business world so that we can perhaps find some of the same balance between discipline and adaptability and when responding to fast-moving threats or challenges?
I wouldn't presume to suggesting a route by which that might happen. I would only comment on what I personally experience. And in that context, yes, this is a live performance. We are all doing this live. I'm having a conversation with you in real time. And we are, to some extent, improvising this conversation. You've got your questions. I know my thing. And we are speaking in an exchange which allows something to come out of it. So in that, in circumstances, in any live performance, that includes, of course, what happens in a business, the business operation, things can go wrong and that it's a frequent event. Of course, the conductor is listening all the time, intently, as compared to the project, that what they've got in front of them. They can see when the bassoon should make their big entry. And it can happen very easily. The bassoon comes in the wrong place, a bar early, a bar late. In which case, one has to enable and make it possible for that bassoonist to recognize that they've made that mistake and to adjust. Now, that in the sense of conducting, it's done gesturally, it's done with engaging across the orchestra with that individual, and they will understand very quickly that something has gone wrong, and then actually indicating a point where they can start and rejoin the group. There are moments in every orchestral score, it's not a completely amorphous being that has no way marks in it. And I will be showing the bassoonist where they can rejoin the ensemble. But the basis of that is listening, actually. Mm-hmm. The orchestra has one golden rule, as does the conductor, which is to listen and react to what is going on all the time. It's not good enough just the beating of the conductor. Some people think that the conductor is acting God, which is the alternative version to the conductor does nothing. Mm. There's a Bugs Bunny cartoon where he goes to the Hollywood Bowl and he's holding up his hands and the singer keeps singing for as long as he holds up his hand. You might have seen that.
Yeah.
That's just not what the conductor does. The conductor isn't writing the music. The conductor is interpreting this thing that they've got in front of them. But the key to that is listening and being part of the ensemble, but the part of the ensemble who has got all the information as opposed to the partial information that is dotted around the orchestra. If the orchestra listens properly, there is a lot of music that they can accomplish on their own where, without making mistakes, without getting in the wrong place. Music which doesn't have maybe the influences which you're talking about, which it doesn't change in tempo or it doesn't change in character, for example, let's say a march. Such a piece just carries on, literally. You can give a downbeat to start the thing off, go off and have a cup of tea, and come back to receive the applause. It's literally as simple as that, because the music is so regular that the players also They can all count to four. They don't need somebody going effectively visually one, two, which is what a conductor is doing. Like you said, it's basically visualizing the numbers of the beat or making into a visual language the beats. But the problems occur usually in moments of change, which is an analogy to what you're talking about. And it's that where the conductor is crucial and can help the orchestra adjust to new tempi and show them what that new environment is like from a central source, actually, because it's the conductor who's saying, this is how we're going to do it this time, guys. And this is what my vision of this music is. And the trust that exists between the orchestra and the conductor allows them to go, okay, we will do that. They don't say to themselves, well, he wants it at this tempo, but actually the second violins think that's a very poor tempo. So they carry on playing whatever it is. That doesn't work in the orchestra. They have to trust the conductor, and the taste, musicality and technical knowledge of the orchestra in order that they've arrived at a vision for this piece, which is going to arrive in a satisfactory performance for the customers of the orchestra, which is the audience.
Conductors lead mostly through gestures, presence, not lengthy instruction. So in your experience, what can that teach us about leadership outside? Because you've mentioned that, you know, musicians will have their own way, perhaps, of expressing themselves. And so your job is almost to bring all of that together in pursuit of the common goal that they've all got. How do you do that? Or how could we translate that, do you think, into outside of the world of music, into the world of commerce or cyber, where clarity and coordination are absolutely critical? What are some of the things that you do with your orchestra to get them to that end point where everybody at the end of the performance goes, wow, that was fantastic. That was one of the best interpretations of whatever it might be that we've ever seen.
The conductor uses gestures for a good reason, that this is an experience for the ears. And if the conductor started shouting, well, Steve, louder, trumpets, or whatever, they would wreck the gig. So there's a practical reason why this is done silently, but not during the rehearsal stage. Now, the rehearsal is our briefing, if you want. So we have this project, new project, which we're, let's say for the sake of argument, nobody has seen before. Right. In fact, the great works of the repertoire, most of the musicians would have played several times, sometimes a lot more than the conductor, by the way, which can be a little bit of an issue with, you know, you step in front of one of the Birmingham Symphony Orchestra and say, Beethoven 4, everybody. Now, I've got this idea about Beethoven 4, that Beethoven, just at the beginning of his deafness, and this is what we should do. And they go, really, guy? We have to convince people that this vision you have for this thing is a studied, considered, and worthy interpretation. So you use gesture for that, and you make sure that people understand your language, I think. That's the other thing. Conducting is codified in a way. What essentially the conductor doing is showing beats. A piece like the Paths of the Blue Danube go. No, actually, it doesn't go like that. It goes. The actual written music has a difference. You have to perform it in a way that has significance, a human significance. And that involves showing that language, being able to offer to the orchestra a language that they can understand. And in so doing, you develop with the orchestra a personal communication. And that is also done with the eyes. And there are moments when you have solos and so on, and making sure people, they are aware. It's another job of the conductor. People, if you've never seen an orchestral score or an individual score in orchestra, it could have three notes halfway through the second movement. That's it. That's all they've got to do. There's one famous symphony by Bruckner where there's only one cymbal crash in the whole thing, and it lasts for an hour and 20 minutes. So the conductor has to make sure that they're aware of those individual participation and enable that person to come in a manner that fits the rest of the performance. So it's a dark art, conducting, because it is a human art, as is management, by the way. There is no one way you say you can read a manual on it and go, well, if I observe all these steps, I will end up at the end that I want to. It's you, it's a human on the stage working with other humans who are trying their hardest to exercise their expertise and apply it to this project and come up with something greater. But in that, of course, is the humanity of what you're doing as a conductor. You're presenting yourself as someone who has actually studied this thing, come up with a vision of it, and is convincing people with humanity, with kindness, with understanding, but also if people aren't doing what you want, you have to be quite clear with that. You don't single out individuals and humiliate them in front of the rest. And using humor is another way. You talked about that. And that is, of course, my secret power, if you want. I started my life in stand-up comedy. I started my life in music. I added stand-up comedy and I brought the music back, basically. So in front of the audience, orchestra, I can, and the audience, in front of the orchestra, I can apply that. Well, what does that mean? I'm not making jokes. I'm just being myself and admitting mistakes and pointing out the errors or failings that I see in the performance in a way that has human qualities, is not autocratic, in a way that the orchestra can see that I know what I want and I'm trying to apply it in a friendly yet concerned in the way of strict way. I want what I want and I'm not allowing them to get away with anything, because that also is another thing that builds trust. If the orchestra can see that you haven't noticed this thing or that thing going wrong, then of course they think to themselves, what if he doesn't care? Why should I? Kind of thing. There are mistakes that happen in a performance and I'm not going to stop every single mistake and go, bar 24, flute. No, there are some things that happen. I know they will be fixed by the individual players. In a rehearsal, something happens, they miss the cue. I'll say, that'll be all right in the performance, won't it? Yes, it will. They've seen that I've seen it and that's enough for them. So that's the way the orchestra works. That's the way the conductor offers themselves. And the ones that are successful have all of those facilities in a heightened sense so that the orchestra can really see that when the person is standing in front of them, they are actually increasing value in what the orchestra does. They're not just metronomically beating their way through the music, just directing the traffic, so to speak. Mm. They're actually bringing a quality to it which would not be there were they not there. And that quality also, and people talk of it famously in, amongst conductors, involves this whole sound of the orchestra changes. So not just they're playing in the right place, they're playing in an interpretatively interesting way, but they're actually qualitatively bringing a sound to the violins who react to the way the conductor gestures through the piece in a way to produce a sound which differs from what they would otherwise play in front of other musicians.
So there's a lot that we've covered there that is what I would call a lot of transferable skills from conductor to leadership. The need for immense empathy, the need to actually understand the overall direction that you want to take, the piece, the business, the role that the individuals have to play, allowing them the opportunity to really get on and do what they do well.
Yes.
And combine that into all of the other skill sets that your team effectively has. Reina, thank you so much for sharing those insights. I'm sure that people will want to listen back to this just a few times to really get their heads around how they might pick up some of the things you've been talking about and take it across into the world of business in general and cybersecurity in particular. So thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more expert insights and thought-provoking discussions. But in the meantime, if you really enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast. If you're interested in becoming an ISF member or continuing the conversation further, please do get in touch with me at steve.durbin@securityforum.org, or indeed get hold of me on LinkedIn. And remember, you can explore all our media and resources at our website, securityforum.org.